This is Yetta Chaikin taping Francis Kirshner, December 20th, 1999, for the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware. Francis Kirshner. How do you spell your name, Francis?
F-R-A-N-C-E-S.
And your last name?
K-I-R-S-H-N-E-R.
When you were born in, where in Russia?
In the Ukraine.
Where?
I was born in a small town called Chudnov.
How do you spell it?
I think it's called C-H-U-D-N-O-V-E.
And what was the closest?
Very small town.
Yeah.
Near Berdichev.
How do you spell that?
Capital B-E-R-D-I-T-C-H-E-V.
Okay. Now, and you were in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
You were born of Jewish parentage.
I was.
And do you and what was the year?
I was born October 21st, 1911.
And that was Tsarist Russia.
Exactly.
And what do you have any recollections of your early life?
I certainly do.
What are they?
Very bad. I was born, I was in a small little room, no larger than my front porch here on 22nd Street, dirt floor, a whitewashed ceiling. If you have ever visited Thomas Jefferson's place where the slave quarters were, that's the type of a room that I lived in. It was...
That was your room to yourself?
That was the room, the entire room for every one of us.
The whole family?
My grandmother, my mother, my younger brother, and myself.
What did your father do?
My father was in Chudnov, and they had a linen business, quite successful, and he married my mother. He was 26. She was 15 and a half when he married her. It was a shidduch.
That means it was arranged marriage.
It was an arranged marriage. And he lived there just a few months there with her after their marriage. They had a big wedding. And after the wedding, she was only 15 and a half. So she missed her mother very much and did not want to stay with his family and wanted to go back to that little one room in Berdichev. So she took, at that time, a few months later, that year later, I was born, and she took me, no, I was 6 months old when she took me to back to Berdichev.
And she left her husband?
She, there isn't any room anyway for him to be there. How could he, just a little one room. And she told him that she just didn't want to leave her mother, 15 and a half. She just wasn't ready to be married. So he decided to come to America. And things were not very good in Russia. So he came to America and with the intention of bringing us over as soon as he possibly could. Just about that time, if you recall, there was a Cold War between Russia and the States, and no one was permitted to get out, and we were caught right in the middle.
And that was what year?
That would be, 1917.
Well, that's when the Russian Revolution started.
Revolution broke out.
Yeah.
And we could not get out. We could not get a passport.
Well, that wasn't the Cold War. That was the Revolution.
The Revolution.
Right.
He tried so hard to give one agent after another money to bring us over to the United States. he had become a citizen meanwhile, went to school and became a citizen. And then he decided, when he decided to bring us over, he gave all the, one agent after another, to bring us over. The United States told him he could only get us, if we could get over to Cherbourg, France, but he did not dare to go into Russia because his life wouldn't be worth anything. So how do you get over to Cherbourg? It's very difficult when you don't have a passport. So he paid one agent, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, after another, and they pocketed the money, and that was it. He had to make more money. Had a little grocery, little store there, dipping an ice cream, and made more money. And finally he decided maybe if he only gave them part of the money and told them that once we got to Cherbourg, then he would give them the rest.
Right.
Well, that's, try to get over a border. If you've ever tried it, it's the world's worst.
Did you try?
Yeah, we went over
to tell me, first of all, tell me what was happening in Russia. During the revolution.
It was very bad. They plundered. They killed. They murdered.
Who's they? Who were the people?
Bolsheviks. They came in and they, in this, as I said, this one, you know, in Russia the winters are very severe. And you get ready. Whatever you can get ready for the winter with your flour. You don't have bakeries that you know. And so they'd come in this one door that we had. It was like a courtyard there. And they'd bang on the door, and if you didn't open it fast enough, they'd break the door in, and right away they'd say, food. They were hungry.
These were the Bolsheviks?
The Bolsheviks.
Are you talking about the army?
The armies were fighting each other.
Which armies were fighting near you?
Well, it was the...
I don't know.
I was a youngster.
Yeah.
I know there were soldiers. They'd come in with the butt of the gun, and there were no men folk, because my father was here, and just my little brother. And they what they took was the... if you didn't give them the food well enough, or you didn't have a chance with your life, every one of the people upstairs were killed. And I don't know what they did, but they were dead. Mm-hmm. They killed them. And finally we came to a point where they took everything. We didn't have anything at all. We didn't even have the flour to bake the bread, you know. And then my mother, I remember so clearly, my mother heard through the little courtyard that if she went to a mill, flour mill, that she would be able to get a sack of flour, because I was very hungry. And I begged my grandmother, if my mother came back, because if you had to go out the courtyard, bullets were flying and whizzing right past your head, you took a chance with your life. But she did take that chance, and I remember so clearly telling my grandmother, if my mother comes back and bakes the flour, would you bake it? Bread, you give me a piece of bread. And if I just can't believe that now that I can go to the stores and I can buy all the bread in the world and I'm getting so choicy about it, where that little piece of black bread
was
so great and so good.
Yeah.
And what can I tell you?
And so you lived through this from 1917
to 1921.
To 1921.
But my brother was almost killed. It's all in this book. Yeah, my brother was almost killed. We were watching the soldiers march by, and the one of the soldiers, he had a little red hat on, shot the hat right off of him, and nicked his forehead. And he said he didn't even wait to see, you know.
If he was dead or not.
Yes, yes. And I had not, you know, I'm going back so many years, I didn't have any toys. The only toy I had was a piece of a stick of wood where I put a little piece of cloth over it, and that was my doll, and two little tin shoe shine. Right. I made a scale out of that, and I remember going and picking little wild flowers and putting that on the scale. That was all that I had. And my grandmother was a very great needle worker, and my grandmother made a certain insignia for the Cossacks, and they all came to her because they wanted that.
So she was
a very great needle worker. Uh-huh. Even when we brought her here to the States, she made gorgeous comforts and different things. And can I stop now for a minute?
Now, Francis, you remember seeing with your own eyes,
yes,
some of the horrors of the Russian Revolution.
Oh, yes.
So can you tell me what it is you saw, even though you were 6 years old? What did you see that the imprint has stayed with you?
Well, the food, the hunger, the killing, the... There was a horrible life.
What was, you said you saw a girl killed.
A young girl. She looked like she was just a youngster, maybe 10 years old at the most, I don't know. I looked through the wooden fence, you know how children are, and I saw they were beaten. They beat her to death. And what she did, I don't know, but she was dead.
Hmm.
There was my brother, as I said, there was just no
feeling
there. Tell
me, what happened to your brother? And not your brother, your mother, your grand, when you got ready to leave,
yes,
your grandmother didn't want to go with you.
My grandmother did not want to come with us because she had the one
son.
So
what happened to him?
He was killed with his family.
Why?
We don't know. I remember being on, when we brought her over here, I heard my mother and my grandmother scream that she had just gotten
word
that they were all dead. They were all dead. And
By that time, Stalin had already
been
in control and killed many people.
Yes.
And so there was no way for you to have food during the pogrom, during the revolution.
We were very hungry.
Right.
We were very hungry. Very hungry. That sack of flour probably saved our life.
What helped you get to Cherbourg? What was the route you took? And why did you decide to start at that time?
My mother had gotten notice, I suppose, or had, was told that they were ready for her, they were coming to get ready to go, and these agents were going to take us. And that's when we were...
So your father had made these arrangements by giving half the money.
Half the part of the money. And then the rest of it, once we had gotten to Cherbourg.
They were going to get the rest.
But
Cherbourg was in France.
In France. It's a seaport in France.
In northern France.
Yes. Very, very difficult to cross that border without a passport.
So what happened? How did you cross the border without a passport?
When we left Russia, all we were able to take was a samovar. My mother had taken that in with a into a pillowcase.
So she hid it?
Yes.
She covered it?
No, she just put it into a pillowcase, thinking, well, you know, we'll take it along.
Yeah.
Then she also had a basket, a wooden basket, and my grandmother had put in two silver spoons, a gold necklace that my mother had gotten, and three graduated gold and silver cups that she had gotten for her wedding. She put that on the bottom of the wooden basket, but another wood on top of that.
She covered it with a layer of wood so you wouldn't see it.
That's right. So they didn't know there was anything underneath.
Yeah.
And that's, I still have it. We still have that.
You still have
those
things.
Yeah, we have those things, yes. And
and then what did they cover the basket? It was
nothing. Just some little things on top. They were worthless, you know. She, and they, when we started out, I remember that I had to start. I was in a wagon of hay, and my mother leaned over and told us, if we stopped, don't tell them you're Jewish. And we drove on, and then finally we took a train, and a man had given me I was hungry. We're always hungry. A piece of salami, and to this day I think there's nothing better than salami. And now I'm getting back to.
So you went. Do you remember crossing the border?
Yes, it was a 12-mile wood. 12
so
miles.
You went through the woods.
We had to go through the woods.
And were you in a horse and carriage?
We had, after we got off the train, we had to walk.
Oh, you walked.
But there were other people with us. It was
quite a number of people. And was it night or
12.
Was it night or day?
We traveled during the day, and that's when one time. We traveled during the day, and then he said he didn't know the agent, the guy didn't know where we were. We'd have to stay for the night. So we put our things down and lay down, and I remember my mother taking off her coat and covering me up. Oh, this is very interesting. When we left Russia, my grandmother, who, as I said, was a great needleworker, sewed the whole inside of my fur coat, the lining, inside of my lining, with $5 gold pieces. The whole lining was just covered. Beautiful job. And as soon as we got up in the morning and woke up, we were approached by roaming bandits. They roamed the woods. And before we went to bed, before we lie down on the ground, we heard the wolves. Well, wolves were very big in Russia.
And they attack
and they,
people.
They not only attack people, but they're scary.
Right.
And you can hear the wolves, so we built a fire. And the guy did say, we're taking a chance. It's either the bandits or the wolves, because wolves are afraid of fire. So in the morning, as we picked ourselves up off the ground, they approached us, and of course,
the bandits, right away,
they opened up the pillowcase, and there was this gorgeous big samovar, silver samovar, and they took that. And then I had this little Russian coat, a little Russian fur coat that my grandmother had put on. And one of the bandits said, if that had been a cloth coat, I would have had it. But right away he said, fur, in Russian, and pulled it off my, and that was the end of my.
So he got all those gold.
Of course, that was the end of the fur coat with the gold pieces throughout and everything. And to this day we think about it, and later I tell my children about how funny that is, that if it had been a cloth coat, I would have been all right. But the fur is what he wanted. And then we're still in bad shape. This group of people, there were several men, women, we were the only children. And
how many people?
They looked like about at least 14 of us.
Uh-huh.
At least 14. And then we're still marching, and they're walking and walking and walking. And finally he said, well, we have to spend another night over here in this lady's house. So we get in the house there, and all of a sudden she hears some kind of a noise in the door. She says, hide. You know, in Russia, everything is built around what they call the ribbe, or the big ovens, like the bakery ovens.
Right.
So she hid my mother in the oven.
In the oven.
And the two men came in with guns, and one of them.
Where were you?
We were standing there, my brother and I. When she heard the knock on the door.
She hid your mother,
but not
you.
No, we were standing there. And one of them came in and he poked the gun to my stomach, and he says, where's your, so this is all done in Russian, where's your mother? And she said, these are my children, in Russian. He said, no, Zhid.
The Jews.
Yeah. So my mother jumped out, and out of the, you know, she thought he was going to kill me. And so she jumped out, and he took, I think she had another ring or something on her. He stuck his hand down her bosom. They all know where they hide those messages.
Uh-huh.
That's when he took her wedding ring that she had hidden. And then we're still having an awful time to get to that border. The whole gang of us, we're just not, he says he's lost a guide, and he's the one said he hurt his foot, and he didn't, it was just a, finally, almost to the border. And what do you think? As we get to the border, they grab us, all of us.
Who's they?
I don't know. The people that are watching the border,
uh-huh.
They grabbed us.
I thought you were going to go someplace that didn't have border guards. You didn't go through the woods.
We went through the woods, and we had to get to a border, some kind. I don't remember.
Yeah,
border.
You didn't know where.
No, I didn't know. And then we're marching. They're marching. They got the whole people with guns in the back. And people in front, and we're marching. My mother's walking. I'm holding each one of our hands, my brother and I. And as we're marching, the man in back of said to my mother, get out of line, he said. If you don't get out, you'll never see your husband alive, because wherever they're going to take us, you'll never see him again. So my mother said, how we got there, I don't know. It was close to France by that. Close to Cherbourg. As we get there, my mother she's walking with me, holding one, each child in one hand. It was only 14 months difference between my brother and I. And she said, Franya, Sonka, sit here on the step. We were obedient children, not like the children of some of the children nowadays don't pay attention, but I did what she told me to. I grabbed his hand, I sat on the step, and she marched on, trying to get out. She said later on in life, she said that she marched and she seemed like a long way, and then she ran into a courtyard while they weren't, they weren't watching, and she fainted.
She fainted?
Fainted in the courtyard. She just, and we were left still on the steps. Somehow or other, she found who she was and where, you know, he was already in Sherbert, my father, waiting there for her. And she found him.
Well, I don't think, you probably just have to cross the border, because Sherbert is far from Russia on the map.
Well, it is, but that's how much we traveled to get to Sherbert.
Well, once you're in Cherbourg, you're in France. Well,
yeah, we were not. Yeah, we had to get over the border. We had no passport to get over. It's just like if I wanted to go.
Right. Okay.
And that was the first time. My father left me when I was a year old. My mother said I grabbed his neck so tight, and she said she almost felt it. I almost felt like maybe I knew.
Because he was waiting there for you.
He left me as a year old, and I saw him again when I was. Was it 9 years old? Close to, yeah. 9 years old. And that's when I first saw my father.
Mm.
In other words, we were separated for 8 years.
Uh-huh. And so then...
From one to nine, that's right.
And then you all came to the United States. You came...
Oh, yeah. We came to... he dressed us in fineries and everything.
How did you get, when you were sitting on those steps?
Yes.
And your mother
a young girl came over, and I'm not very bright now, but I wasn't when I was a child. I was a bright child. And she came over, said, Franya. And when she said Franya, I knew that she must have known
me.
My, come with me, I know where your mother and father So, and that's when I first saw my mother standing there kissing my father out there at the hotel on the ground. And I because I was a year old when he left, and I saw him again when I was 9. So you see, it was quite a, you know, I didn't have a father in those 8 years. And then we, we're in a, he had, you know, of course, that I was a citizen before I even came here. Because he became a citizen at that time.
Right.
At that time, we became, the minors became citizens. And while we're waiting in a nice, very nice restaurant there, my father all of a sudden put his hand in his pocket. All the money in the world that he had was in traveling checks. They had cut out the pocket. They're very, very good at that. And we were...
Suddenly he had no money.
He had no money.
It was
so he had to wire, it was American Express, and he had to wire. They told him to stay put. So we missed our...
Your
ship. But if you want to know something interesting is, my husband had the same
experience.
My father and he both went to Russia. I mean, both went to Cherbourg his uncle, my father's my husband's uncle went to Cherbourg
to get at him.
His family, and the only reason we didn't come back on the same ship was because
he was
robbed.
Was stolen.
See how bright you are? Hilda told me you were bright. Anyway, that's part of the story. And finally, we came over in the Aquitania. It took us 6 days to come over. That's how long this ship took to come over. And it was not the... It was a beautiful trip because we came first class. My father had arranged all that.
How come your father had so much money?
Well, he worked awfully hard day and night to make it.
Because most people came over steerage.
No. We came over first class. Did you know the Mudricks, Ben Mudrick?
And are you related to them?
No, they were very close friends of ours. And we stayed with them for 3 weeks in Wilmington. And then, of course, we came to Ellis Island. And I can remember my father picking me up in the air.
Showing you.
And now, as we came to Ellis Island, and he said, "Look, you see that lady?" He said, "That's the Statue of Liberty." And he said, "Now," he said, "you're free. You don't have to be frightened anymore." I can remember that.
Yeah.
But the trip was very rough. It was the whales or whatever is kept. We had a very bad storm. We thought the whole thing was going over.
Mm.
But 6 full days. But it was nice. It was
Your family was
because
together.
Because we were together.
Yeah,
and then we
right.
came, and then it was...
And then you came right to Wilmington?
No, we came to New York and stayed with a cousin of ours for about 2 weeks. And then we came to Mudricks and stayed there, where the new fire... the fire station there?
So that's a third and
third
the
and,
King.
Third
and King, because Ben Mudrick had his shoe store.
At Third and Market.
Third and King. Right.
Yes. Yeah, but they were 513, I think, East 3rd Street, the house. They didn't live at the store.
Uh-huh.
And they were nice people.
And then you stayed there until your family...
Until my father bought a little store there at 7th and Pine.
Uh-huh.
And that was bad, you know. That was bad.
Why?
Well, it was... There was no heat, just little we almost died there, being smoked to death, but, you know, we had a little portable thing there.
You mean for
outdoor
heat?
Outdoor privy, you know, and all the goodies, you know. It wasn't great. A lot of things were. And I worked for $1 a day. I guess you know that story with everybody, what goes on. I worked for... $7.10 a week, 7 days a week.
Where did you work?
I came out of Goldie College. and graduated with secretarial course and had to take a job at the Wilmington Drygas.
This was during the Depression.
During Depression.
What year was it?
Was it 1932, I think.
So you worked in the Wilmington Dry Goods.
I worked in the Dry Goods for $7.10 a week, including Sundays, when, which was free.
Were they open on Sundays?
No.
I thought we had blue laws.
They did, but you had to come in Sundays to straighten stock.
To clean.
And you didn't get paid for that. But and I had to pay 8 cents carfare, 2 for 15. And I didn't have that, so I remember Joe Lazarus taking out 15 cents and giving me 15 cents, my car fare. That was my pay and everything, totally and everything. Then, of course, when NRA, when Roosevelt came in, we were making $13.50, and our hours were cut. So, and I remember washing dishes in a restaurant. Somebody asked me if I'd like to wash dishes. I washed dishes for a whole day for $1. Make that dollar, because we had a little store there, but it was bringing in zero, and the money was very. I worked at Third and King for as a youngster with a little thin coat, and this was the cold. The winters were much colder than they are now, and for the Quicksteins, they were very nice people, and.
This is David Crickstein's father.
Father, exactly. No, I think it was an uncle.
An uncle.
An uncle. And they would give me a dollar and a half and gave me some fruit, you know, a little mark here and there, you know. And I ran over to my mother. I was so excited about giving her that dollar and a half, you know. But I worked from morning, from 9 o'clock till 12 o'clock at night. Because, you know, King Street was wide open at that time. Things were lively, but they were nice.
My father-in-law also worked till 11, 12 o'clock at night for $2.50 a week.
And I remember, like I mentioned, when he walked in, I said to Mrs. Shike, I said, where were you? Oh, I stopped over at Mrs. Shike's house, and she's a nice lady. I didn't know her well.
Well, you sound to me, so your husband, you married, you went to school in Wilmington.
Oh, yes.
And what was it like being Jewish?
Oh, did I tell you that I had to carry a piece of wood in school in Russia? Otherwise, I was sent home to keep warm. Things like that, you know.
When you went to school in Russia, you brought your own wood.
I brought my, had to bring a piece of wood every day when we went to school, gymnasium, whatever it was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then when you came to Wilmington, you were, by that time you were 11. During the revolution, did they, the schools run in Russia? Did they have schools?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So you were
able. I went to school.
Huh?
I went to school.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. As I said, I had to bring a piece of wood. I remember carrying the wood. And sometimes I'd forget it, and I had to run back because I knew if I didn't bring the wood, I would be sent home because they needed that to keep warm.
But when you came to Wilmington, that wasn't true. You went to, what schools did you go to here?
A school there on the east side. I think it's in that paper there.
Yeah.
I found out. I went to school, and then I went to
Bancroft.
Well,
that's all right.
Well,
that's all right.
And then I went to, I graduated Goldie.
Goldie. Yeah, Goldie. You went to Wilmington High.
Yes.
And then you graduated Goldie Bigham.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, and then
Then you married. When did you meet your husband?
Well, that's a story of its own. I met my husband.
What was his name?
Sam Kirshner. Did you know him, electrician?
No. Well, that's right.
He was an electrician. And do you remember Grossman's of Fourth and Orange?
Right. It was an electrical
supply store.
Sold supply.
My mother was friendly with Mrs. Grossman. She'd walk by, you know, she never drove. And so she'd go, you know, and meanwhile she'd stop and talk this way. My mother happened to be a beautiful person. And she stopped over and to talk to her. And years ago, people didn't have telephones, only the stores. Some had, that had money, they had it. But most of the people did not have phones. So I was the runner. Now we had the little store on Woodlawn Avenue, and my mother would if Mrs. Grossman had a man that used to work about two blocks, lived about two blocks from where our store was, so she would call me and she'd say, would you mind getting, he didn't come to work, or whatever his name was, John or whatever, and would you please come and get the phone? So Mrs. Grossman one day said, you know, and my mother was going around, my God, you know, her daughter's not married, you know, yet, and she's looking for a nice fellow for me, you know, it's a terrible tragedy, you know. I guess she was married 50 and a half, I guess she figured I should have been married at the age, in my late 20s already, and here I'm still on the shelf. So she said, Mrs. Grossman said to her, please get, and by the way, she said, this fellow I was telling you about, a nice young Jewish fellow, is here. When she comes back, you know, I ran up to get the guy, she said, put her on the phone and I'll get him on the phone. My husband was a very bashful guy. So she put him on the phone, he made a date with me, and the last minute, it was for 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, he didn't show up. About 10 after 8, the phone rang, he's sorry, but he's got an emergency. So I thought, well, you know, at that time we really didn't care. The guys would come in from Chester, put in a pint of gas, and we had enough boyfriends, and I didn't make any, really make that much difference. Only my mother was worried. So he finally, I said, well, that's all right. And he said, well, how about tomorrow night or whatever night? And I said, okay. Well, I made another date. He was still late. He was always late.
Yeah.
So finally, one night after going with him for about, I'd say about close to a year, my mother said, so what's going on with you two? You know, the nice Jewish mother, you know? So I said, I don't know, look, I'm, you know. She says, well, why don't you ask him? So I asked him. So one night we're coming home from somewhere we had been, and I said to him, Sam, do you have intentions of ever getting married? Married, he said. How can I get married? I don't have any money, I don't have a house, I don't have, you know, this is back in 1941. I said, well, in that case, I guess I'll have to start looking for somebody else, too. Because I was kind of his steady girl by then. So he said, well, go ahead and go. So my mother was still shopping around, I guess, for me down to Goldenburg. Do you remember Goldenburg, Second and Market?
Right.
And she said, you know what? She said, I've got a nice man working for me. Nice Jewish fellow from Philadelphia. And he's such a nice guy, but I'd like to see him get a nice girl. Well, they had Jamola Day that time at the Dry Goods. That was a big affair at the Hotel DuPont. She said, why don't you ask her to ask him to go? So I asked him. This was a guy close to 6 foot, you know how big I am. And he took me out, and I took him there that night. The next night he asked me to go out with him again. A real sweetheart. And then he said, come meet my parents. You know, he'd like for me to meet his parents when I did that. And then he said, and then he proposed marriage right away. Well, you know, it wasn't long. As soon as Sam found out that I was getting someone else, did you ever go into a store and you're looking at a dress and you think you're going to buy it, but if you're going to take it, they put a personal, that was the same.
So Sam came.
So then I had two of them. I was married, I was engaged to Lou, I had the date set, and I married Sam. Would you like to have a cold glass of orange juice?
No.
I'm talking you to death.
No, that's a great story.
Was it true?
Yeah.
Is it true?
So you married Sam.
I married my Sam.
Okay.
Very nice.
And so how long were you married?
I was married close to 50 years.
50 years.
49 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And your husband was an electrician?
Yes, he was.
And he worked in his own business?
Yes, he had self-employed.
Uh-huh.
Well, I thank...
What do I know about you?
I thank you very much for allowing me to take...
You know what I'd like to do?